Hello and welcome to Pause It Play It, the 1975 podcast, on part two of Robots. In this episode, we talk about the early Drive Like I Do version, the 1975 album version, and the legacy this song has had. You can follow us on Twitter at the 1975 pod, or you can follow us on Facebook by searching Pause It Play It Pod, or you can email us at pauseitplayitpod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Bienvenidos a Pause It Play It, el podcast de the 1975.
That's why I'll edit it in, you know. Right, so we've sort of talked about, like, we've talked about when you guys heard it for the first time. Mm. I mean, it's not that exciting when I heard it for the first time. I first heard it when I got the album. maybe it was on the CD you gave me, Matt. It probably was, wasn't it?
But it 100% was.
The first time I remember it, honestly, is listening to the album. What do you think set Robbers apart from the other songs you heard around the same time?
Go on, Manny, take this one.
So in contrast to like Sex and Chocolate, Robbers. Yeah.
Robbers was the first song I heard, I think. Ooh. Other than the Donkey Kong stuff.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we planned for you to come on this episode, really, isn't it?
I mean, I still love the original version.
Yeah,
more than
it is cool.
The one.
More.
Yeah. And I don't say that to be contrarian. Like, what are the other ones that have? There have been plenty that they've upgraded, but Robbers is just so raw on that first recording of it.
You always liked his voice, right?
Yeah. Just the he's shouting in tune. It's just incredible. Like at the end of that, when he's, what does he say? You look so cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do you turn one line into the minute-long outro of a song?
That's a really good point. But he does it well.
Oh man, I remember driving back to Hull when I was at uni there, just putting that on through the speakers and just fucking creaming.
It's just so anthemic. Like, I know that sex is anthemic, but it's anthemic on a different level. I feel like Robbers hits you in your soul, whereas Sex hits you in your feet, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Makes you want to jump and scream, whereas Robbers gets you there. It's just right in the heart. And it's not even like the most musically advanced song they've ever written. You know,
it's one of the simplest, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, verse, chorus, middle eighth, verse, chorus. That's off the top of my head. I'm just throwing something out.
The outro is like, it's a pretty standard song structure, isn't it? It's just
but it's just so good.
Right, how long does that outro last? Can you get that up?
While we do, I like as great of a song as it is, I don't think it has the sort of status and reverence it does without the latter half of that song. Because I think the bridge from the "and now that you've got your gun" from there to the pause and the big "now everybody's dead," that last verse, and then the outro, that makes the song as good as the first half is. You've just got your verse chorus, but that second half is just it's just brilliant, isn't it? And what they wrote, they claim they wrote this when they were what, 17, 15, 16, 17, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And because the thing is, what the lyrics aren't that, they're not. I don't know if you hadn't heard the song and you read the lyrics, they're completely different.
Absolutely.
They're not going to change your life, are they? The lyrics.
No.
And they don't. Like, I don't know. I've never been one to really connect with lyrics in terms of the whole song. But the way they're sung is just transmits so much. It's like it doesn't matter what the lyrics are. But then again, it does, because he's saying something as simple and mundane as "you look so cool."
It's a minute, that outro, man.
A minute from so I was considering the outro from being from "Well, Now That You've Got Your Gun."
And so first time he says "you look so cool" right at the end, that's there's a minute like where he's just saying "you look so cool" over and over again.
Right. I mean, from "Well, Now That You've Got Your Gun," there's a chord change, and then it just starts escalating from there on out.
I'd argue there's a verse in between from "Now Everybody's Dead" and "We're Driving Past My Old School." I'd argue that's a verse, you know.
Yeah, there's only like 5 seconds between the last "You've Got Your Gun" and the outro.
But that's even more like, that's, I feel like that's even, that's not typical to go, what I would consider bridge, verse, outro. Not bridge, verse, chorus, double chorus, like a lot of pop songs. And when they wrote this, pop punk songs they were listening to, that is the typical structure of those songs. Like, off the top of my head, I can't think of a song that goes bridge, verse, outro.
Come on, that's off my head.
Cute Without the E by Taking Back Sunday.
That's a good point.
There's quite a few Taking Back Sunday ones that do that. I don't know if that will have been born in mind at the time. But even then, there's just this feel to it that it doesn't give you the impression that they're following structure. So there is like a verse-like feel to the bit from "Now You've Got Your Gun." But it's this sense that it's, right, we're going to up it here. And then you're like, it can't get more intense than this. And then "Now Everybody's Dead," you think it's settling down. Everything's gone wrong. And then, boom, he smacks you in the face again and it just explodes. Yeah. And then it's getting bigger, it's swelling, and the tempo hasn't changed or anything. It's just growing, and you don't really know where it's coming from, all that energy. And then you think it can't get any bigger, and he does the "she says, babe,"
yeah,
and he just smashes in with it, and then there's another lift while he's saying "you look so cool." You're like, no man, like you can't go any further than this. And then, boom, he really wants to hammer it home that "you look so cool." And fucking hell, I'm getting excited about this. I've not thought about this song yet.
That's what you'd want, man, that feeling.
Oh, man.
Sick. I'm watching the video while we're talking, like, getting myself excited about the original video.
What,
and it is. Oh, we should start a podcast. Oh, wait.
It's not uncommon for them, though, to change the...
It's not unusual.
to change the phrasing and in verse by verse. Like, what I mean is, like... The City is another example where you consider... Because obviously that's got, like, a proper chorus. But then if you consider how the verses work around that, they change... Well, verse to verse, really, the phrasing of the lyrics changes between each one. So it's not, and they still do it now. Look at Too Shy. Like, the second verse of Too Shy is different. The phrasing of the lyrics is different to the first. So I think it's...
In Too Shy, it's really important and really apparent.
Yeah, like, but from... That's an advanced songwriting technique. I don't know, it's not... To do it from so early on and to have these sort of like ideas, like, and whether it's intentional, it's like whether they're writing a song and it's thinking like, right, let's make a conscious decision to change the lyrics in this verse, sorry, change the phrasing in this verse to this verse, But even though it's not a technical song, like we say, it's pretty. It's like the same chords all the way through, apart from that bridge bit. But just those changes in the dynamics and the way the lyrics are performed just keeps you captivated throughout. And then it builds up to that huge payoff at the end.
It's that the original of this is vocally so exposed, and it's a really brilliant vocal.
Yeah.
In that original, when he's really singing it and pushing it out of his throat, it's gorgeous. It's less exposed in the proper in the song.
In the album version.
Yeah, in the album version, it's less so. Like, it's really vocal driven on that original one, and I think it was a real sales pitch for me, this song, when I was first getting into them, that was like, what? When it's that soaring, but also very compressed. Do you know what I mean? But not auto-tune, but very like, and it's up there, and it feels fucking great. It makes you feel good to listen to it. It's a production technique, and you can see a really credible producer going, "Oh, it's cheesy to do that. That's how you make a pop song, but not a pop band."
Next week.
I can see why you wouldn't want to make it sound like that, but in that original, it's so led by that. It's beautiful. How could you not be sold on it?
Well, that's what I mean. I think they castrated the song a bit on the album version. Because you've got this like constant bed of synth throughout it, and it just occupies space within the landscape of the song that doesn't allow the vocal to drive it as much, and you don't get that impact, the payoff, in the same way.
Do you not think? Because I think that I prefer the album version, but I would say, on the whole, my music taste lends itself a lot more to the Drive Like I Do version. Because all that stuff they've been listening to, like all the sort of Midwest emo stuff, I love it all. I love all that shit. But I prefer the album version. But I think just in terms of the vocal, I think that it's really soft in the verses. And I think the range that the way he uses his voice and the range throughout the song, I think it gives that moment even more impact at the end.
On the album version?
On the album version, yeah.
This original version, I feel like that just step back in production allows the instrumentation space to breathe and be. You know, the instrumentation that is there, and with the additional synth, because there is synth in the original, or this YouTube version I'm currently listening to, it's there, but it's not retracting from the other things. It's like, it feels more live, if that makes sense, where each individual instrument and his vocal has that depth, whereas I think with the additional synth, it makes it more two-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
There's just in the mix, there's way more vocal in the original.
Yeah,
you got to have a lot of faith in someone's vocal to do that. And to be fair, on paper, I might not have that faith in my. Feel free to edit that out. But like, when I look at this, when he stood in front of that fire, bro, and just losing his shit. Oh my god, Marta! Like, oh.
I mean, it was
really cuts through. It's beautifully EQ'd.
Yeah, it does.
It was the song that made you want to write that song. You wish you'd have written it and got to perform it live and pour your heart out on stage like that, just giving it everything. I always wanted to write a song as good as that. Like, that was like the benchmark for me.
Yeah.
But when did you start feeling like that, Manny? Like, did you feel like from MySpace, or like from when you saw it live, or later, or
from MySpace? Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just absolutely sold on that. And it's weird, the question whether Matt Ely's like a good singer, it's like in the more recent stuff, it's so produced. It's almost used like an instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not any kind of.
I mean,
he's rarely given space just to let his natural tone.
Exactly.
Be exposed. And when it is given, because you just couldn't, like, some of the production on the later stuff is so bold and colourful and everywhere that it would get lost in the mix if you let it, if you gave it space just to be heard.
I know 100% what you mean, because particularly on Notes, so many songs on that, the vocal production is like a huge part of the song, even to the extent where like some songs are like vocoder, it's like that. Mm-hmm. And that, mm-hmm. if you listen to like the old Drive Like I Do stuff, that's insane to think that the vocal we're listening to now on that early version is the same band that's literally, it's like putting the vocal through a vocoder. I agree 100%, but I think I'd argue that he is a good singer, because there are moments where he demonstrates that, and there are ones where the vocal has been produced to an extent where it has to be, because if you look at the bands they're competing with now, the production standard has to be at a certain amount that they have to be able to compete with them. Like they couldn't produce like a lo-fi sort of pop song now. It wouldn't work, because they're competing with people like, honestly, Harry Styles, Dua Lipa, people like that, people with those levels of production. I just saw Dan look up then when I mentioned Dua Lipa.
I wanted to say Ariana Grande and he said Dua Lipa, and I was like, all right.
But yeah, I think there are moments where he sort of demonstrates how good his vocal is, like Always Wanna Die. I think that's very, I think it's really well sung. Love It If We Made It as well. I think that's a very, I think Love It If We Made It is a very similar delivery to this early Robbers version, because I think he's singing that, maybe not the limit of his register, but I think he's really pushing his vocal. And you can tell.
Like Mark Hopperson, Damn It.
Yeah, it is. It's true, it is. Yes.
My favourite example that really restored my faith in the 1975, I agree, he's like, he's not a good technical singer. Like, he's not Ariana Grande. He's not like controlling his vocals like they were a saxophone.
You're a saxophone.
His tone, his natural tone, the stuff he's able to sound like when he's when he's pushing it to the extreme, is just fantastic, and it can stand alone in an acoustic song or a more vocally exposed song.
Yeah, 102, and, bro.
And they're not a song about Matt Healy, the vocalist. They're not a band
about
Matt Healy,
yeah.
the vocalist. So it doesn't take centre stage in a lot of the later stuff, but absolutely, like, when he's on vocal form, it's the best. He's one of the best vocalists, in my opinion. And my favourite example, post-Robbers, is... forget the name. It's the one about him losing his brain.
Ballad of Me and My Brain.
Yeah.
That's that shit, man. Yeah. That is great vocal.
And he's shouting, isn't it, in that Robbers way. It's hard. Yeah. Nobody's going to let him have that rawness, that unproducedness, because we're paying a guy, man. Like, nobody's going to say, do you know what? I just put some reverb on it. It sounded all right, actually. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's people having to justify the wages now. And it's like, yeah. I'm just like, and to be fair, the Robbers vocal is very different. If we look back to those MySpace demos, and that's what we're talking about, like, Sex and Chocolate weren't like that either. There was just something about it was like just in his perfect register, what he was so comfortable with, that allowed him to express it so much in that original song. And you're like, all right.
Have you heard I call them the Donkey Kong songs. Like they referred to, like, they had Nintendo references.
Yes, Scary Monsters.
Uh huh.
Vanellope.
Dragon Ninja.
What?
Don't Google it, kids.
In those demos, he's singing like that for a lot of it.
Yeah.
You just get the sense like he's dragging himself along through the song, and it just he manages to be naturally in tune or not, but it works.
The Robbers vocal, it still feels very... the original Drive Like I Do, it still feels very controlled. It doesn't feel like he's right on the limit of what he can do.
That's a good point, actually.
It's very raw, and even in the... like the Now Everybody's Dead bit, he's really pushing that, but it feels like the delivery on that feels like it's an intentional choice that's he's gonna deliver it like he's really pushing for it. But I don't think it is. I don't think the song is. But I'd be interested to know if the key's the same between the album version.
You mean the album key versus the demo MySpace key?
Yeah,
I think that. Have they moved it to make it easier for him to sing, and that's almost ruined, not ruined, but like made it less intense?
I don't think it is, though, you know.
Okay, what do you think to this, though? With or Without You by U2?
I like it, the guest asking us questions.
you know what?
Yeah, I see that.
I've not listened to a lot of U2, so I don't think I could really pass comment. However, I am aware of With or Without You.
It's... I imagine one of the reasons why you've made that comparison is the chord progression, because it's that 1-5-6-4. It's the four chords that so many pop songs are built around.
Are they like blink chords? Well, like me and Manu were writing a song when we were 13 years old.
Yeah, it's damn it. It's C, yeah, G, yeah, okay. A minor, F. It's that chord progression.
Still, that makes no sense. You'll have to tell me where I am on a fretboard, but okay, good. Yeah, I think we're the same.
Oh God, no! Like I don't know how it compares to the album version, but the original, it feels like a direct ripoff. Like they've got the with the bass, dun 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 dun. Like I don't know if you just want to flick it on. It's like
I'm listening to it right now. It's awful. I mean, it's a terrible revelation for a 1975 fan. That's what I'm saying. It's a lovely song.
I mean,
with or without you. That must end now. Oh my God.
Robbers is better.
Did I have Bono moaning all over it?
We'll reconsider at the end of the podcast if I switch to you two.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they took the feel and the chord progression, the sense of building tension, and delivered. It's like With or Without You's like, oh, we're gonna blow up.
Bro, this is so important. I'm so glad you brought this up.
Yeah, it's really, such. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities.
Are you all listening to it?
Yeah, we're all listening to it right now.
I see.
I never realised how much comparison there was between Adam's style and the Edge's style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this but is... Yeah. Wow. Do you know what? There's plenty, like, imagine if we could interview Matt Healy as a group and be like, right, Matt, why does Rubber sound like fucking With or Without You? Tell us about how much of a fan you are of U2. I'll pretend you don't like him. Deny it.
You should put in the song we're talking about. Put in With or Without You.
I wonder how much it had to do with them reworking it for the album, because you listen to them side by side and you just think lawsuit, right?
Well, I don't know. I think the things it's lost from the original are the things it's gained in. I think it's more of a copy.
The original.
No, I think the album version's more of a copy than the original. Okay. So I think hey guys, I'll just turn down the originality fade.
The comparison to With or Without You, have you just thought of that today or have you thought of it in the past?
No, I've thought in the past, Yeah, I've...
He's never told me. It's like he's been preparing to be on a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I literally don't care because I think Robbers is just such a mint song and it's standalone. They're both great songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd say there's more of a legal case in terms of plagiarism here than with this Ed Sheeran thing with, what is it, Thinking Out Loud and the Marvin Gaye song.
Oh, yeah. Let's get it on.
I think it'd be hard for Bono because he wants to be an activist as well, doesn't it? So, like Matt Healy's there going, I'm just trying to promote my cause through my music, bro.
Yeah.
Do you know the
Starved Children?
The what's it called? Juice WRLD and Yellow Card.
Well, I know about Yellow Card.
Well, Juice WRLD is this rapper who like died recently, and before he died, Yellow Card was suing him for plagiarism.
Oh shit!
And since he died,
oh, is he the religious rapper?
I don't think so. No.
Oh no, no! I think I'm thinking of Katy Perry had a lawsuit with the. Like a Christian rapper.
Oh, right. But since he died, they're still suing his estate now, which is...
Oh, also, still suing.
That's probably when it happens at that level, right? I don't... Because Marvin Gaye's dead and his estate have just gone after Ed Sheeran. So I imagine whoever owns Bono's music could just go after them.
Yeah.
Really, it's not the alive people going after the dead people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're just chilled out there.
I would argue that one of the things that I feel like the album version is better is because of the sample used in An Encounter and in Robbers. I think that's such a clever thing to have a song that uses the same samples that don't succeed each other in the album listing. And obviously live, it works so good because as soon as you hear An Encounter, there's like that, it's almost like that intangible sound. Cause it's just a texture, isn't it? It's not a loop or anything. It's just a sample. And you know Robbers is coming.
Yeah. I've never tied it to it, like associated it directly with An Encounter, but every time I've seen them live since they got like a good sound design, live sound design, like they dip into threatening to play Robbers like throughout the set. I always found
yeah.
And if you like Robbers, then that's a real tease.
It's a real ball tickler.
Yeah,
but it used to be that because you guys are saying that they used to do it in the same way on the album. It used to be An Encounter, Heart Out, and now it's not because obviously they don't really play Heart Out anymore, and they always play Robbers. It now goes. It goes An Encounter, Robbers, which, I don't know, I like both. It's I'm running on the fence as to which one which one I prefer. Because I like the idea that it teases you and then goes into the start of Heart Out, which is just such a shift for the ethereal, atmospheric An Encounter, and then into that hard sort of like static bass sound. Yeah. But then I love it because like on the new album, like on when streaming goes into the birthday party, that's amazing. That sort of like transition between the two is so good. And it's a similar thing when you hear An Encounter and Robbers. I just think it's really clever how they switch it up on the album.
I mean, I'm gonna listen to it again after we do this. With renewed appreciation.
I hope that's what everyone says after they've listened to a podcast episode. Although most aren't involved in the episode.
What do you think to the new album?
I think it's brilliant.
Well, you should listen to our review. Yeah, I love it. I think it's the best album they've done.
Whoa.
That's big, that. We discussed it in the last thing, but to me... It's challenging for me. It's a challenging.
Oh, yeah, it's challenging.
It's challenging because it's not all the music that got me into them, right? It's it's different now. They're a different band to what I first listened to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't expect a 10-track pop album. Put it that way. It's very. do you know what I saw on Twitter? Actually, some guy that used to knock around with them back in the day. You probably know him. And he said that Matty and George had a zip-up CD wallet.
Nice.
And one time, apparently, they were showing him and they had like sort of like Fatboy Slim, John Mayer, System of a Down, and all this sort of stuff. And he was saying that, like, he reckons that Notes is their version of the CD wallet of all these different bands.
Yeah, probably is, to be fair.
A thing about 1975, right, that I always thought was fucking awesome is that they so clearly came from the what did you say, the Midwest emo?
Yeah, yeah.
I've not heard that term, but that kind of music was... they were so heavily influenced, like, that's what they were listening to at the time, the fact that he was in Satan's Hollow and the first demos were so punky.
Yeah.
Any bands around at that time that listened to that were just imitating Blink, Fall Out Boy, Taking Back Sunday. And these... And so bands like that just never even... entertained ideas of becoming global rock stars or mainstream even. And the sound that they were putting out, it was so obviously influenced by all these bands, but so listenable, palatable to a mainstream audience.
I feel one of the reasons why this is so big and as well is because that's just one facet of the influence, like, and I think I mean, there's a bit of criticism now that they're... Not criticism as such, but I think people are commenting on the fact that a lot of Notes, honestly, I don't want to give too much away for you, you know, listen. A lot of it's electronic. And I feel like at the early part of the career, they sort of molded themselves more into the sort of American guitar band, let's say. And then to this part of the career, it's a lot more they're picking from those electronic influences. That because they're very well versed in music, like, you know, they're not like they actually cite Brian Eno as an influence. Like, and I feel it's genuine as well. Like, I don't think they're trying to impress anyone by saying Brian Eno.
I heard a quote from Josh Daniel the other day, and it was talking about the pop punk, no, sorry, not the pop punk influences, the emo influences, but he was saying, like, the influences are proper emo. Don't quote me on that. That's a paraphrase.
Like first wave.
Not that Fallout. Yeah, not that Fallout Boy pop punk nonsense.
Is that where these real quotes are, like, what, these fake ones?
Yeah.
Is it real?
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Because you get a lot of fake Matty Healy quotes online. But speaking of George Daniel,
is this a part? Is this like a bit of...
This is a bit.
Nice. Welcome to our segment.
So last seen, where was he last seen? Where was he last spotted?
Basically.
No, you sausage.
Oh, no, that would be really cool.
Because, possibly illegal. Because Dan and George were such good friends back in the day, the exchange phone numbers. I might change the story every time we have to explain it, actually. And it's still in Dan's phone, so we can check his...
So, like, go on.
I was gonna say
one text.
We can
use it once.
We're basically
the other week.
We can see when he was last seen just by going on WhatsApp. However, we did accidentally use it the other week when Dan, what did you text George Daniel?
I just said, "You up?" Question mark.
And so before this, we thought, because his previous last seen hadn't changed from a week ago, and that was then we were like, oh yeah, he's probably not his number then, because surely George would have used his WhatsApp in a week. And then the second Dan sent you up online,
and yeah, like, yeah, it was like blue ticks. He'd kid, seen the message.
Kid, how you got blue ticks?
Like, just nobody messages him on WhatsApp, basically. So when he gets to WhatsApp, he reads it, and it's me.
Oh, shit. Why did you just say that? You should have said something that would oblige your response.
No, well, I don't know. I think we want to save it for, like, an emergency. I don't know.
He's probably deleted it now, right?
No. He's still, like, his last scene, I don't know if you want to make a thing of it, but his last scene was yesterday, 11:15 p.m.
Ooh.
So getting on for 12 hours ago. Oh, just over 12 hours ago. on WhatsApp. So
I don't have loads to say about this lyrically, because I don't think it's we're coming off Heart Out really, which I think is, you know, that's at least 5 years development in Matt Healy's lyrical style. It's not okay individually, line by line. It's not the strongest, but I think it does. It's pretty good at scene setting. The specific references to that, her balaclava is starting to chafe, and then when she gets his gun, he's begging, babe, stay. I think the really well-worked lyrics together, and I think they really give an idea of what this song is about without the individual lines being the conversational Matt Healy lyrics that we know.
It's a story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've just, as we've been talking, I've actually had a real moment looking at these words because of, if you'll never eat, you'll never grow. It's a line from Nose.
It is. It's Roadkill, yeah.
Did you guys already know that as proper 975 fans?
Yeah.
And it was referencing directly back to Robert.
Yeah, as people that feature our 975 podcast ad, we picked up on that.
I just wanted to check because I also knew, so just checking that you knew.
Oh, okay, yeah, here goes.
Yeah, I had no fucking idea. And like, I've obviously been listening to Notes, and I'm sat here looking at that going, holy shit, fuck, he's clearly directly referencing his own song, which is a real common theme for the 1975 of Matt Healy. But
yeah, particularly through Notes as well.
What a blatant one, yeah.
Because every line's just a snapshot, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
It's based on True Romance, right? The Tarantino film.
Yeah, loosely. Yeah.
Or Bonnie and Clyde, like...
Yeah.
I've never, cross-referenced the two to loosely based on it.
It's loose, but at the end of... the final parts of True Romance, there's a big shootout, and... the woman is just looking at the man. Great description there. And just saying over and over again, you look so cool. So that is taken from True Romance. And I would probably say Now Everybody's Dead. That's probably taken from True Romance. We also have a purple Cadillac, which I think Dave Maloney stole for his song Young and in Love, whatever it's called. Now we're in your purple Cadillac. That one.
The Cape Race, everybody. Welcome to Manchester.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are elements of True Romance, but when I watched True Romance, I was expecting more of a link. It's very loose.
What do you know about Bonnie and Clyde?
Not much.
I the video, I think, is very representative of the whole Bonnie and Clyde thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know much, but yeah, like
I know I love you. Scrubs reference there.
I memorized this, I'm reading it. It was originally inspired by the True Romance. And he said, like, couples that are hopelessly romantic notion that two people can meet and instantly fall in love. An escape story where love and the highest long consequences all against the odds. So, yeah, it's taken inspiration from that. And I feel like it's very sort of... It's weird that, because it's very teenage musician to write a song about a film or a TV show that you sort of... Like, I don't think he'll be the only musician that has watched a film and has sort of been like so sort of like... into the plot and the story that is directly inspired a song that they've written.
It's a different Matt Healy, isn't it? It's Matt Healy trying to be 15.
Yeah.
What's credible? Let me write a song about it.
He still does it so well, though. Like,
yeah.
I remember when I was like that age, like around the time this came out, and I read that book that they made a film out of called Life of Pi.
Oh yeah.
Ah yeah.
And
you read? Did you read it before the film came out?
I did actually.
Mama.
It took me like a year. And And it was just like the first book I'd read in years. And I was like, oh, right, like, I have nothing to write about. I'm going to write about this. It seems cool. And it was shit. Like, it was just like describing the plot narratively because it just didn't occur to me to tell that story in any other way. And the fact that he's done it so... Yeah, so it's an immature concept to do that, but he just did it in such an elegant, subtle, mature way.
Yeah.
Just taking little... You don't have to know what it's about just to get your mind filled with all these cinematic images. Like, now everybody's dead and they're driving past my old school. You can imagine this couple having just butchered a load of people, and then this like symbol of innocence just floating past in the background.
Yeah, that is a nice
and it's like comparison. Two lines there, and it just conjures that feeling, saying a lot with so little. And even if you don't directly relate to it or get what it means, you're just like, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, I really love how they're clearly talking about committing crimes, whatever they are, and what they're talking about through the whole song is how cool you look while you're committing those crimes, not what the crimes are, the benefits, like, you know, negatives of committing the crime. It's like, you look fucking fit, babe.
Uh-huh. And if you look at the lyrics, there's the one line doesn't follow from the other.
No.
It's just like his mind has entered a headspace, like an energy, and he's just plucking scenes.
Yeah.
And just putting them there.
We said something similar.
And you're like, whoa.
Sorry, we said something similar in the City episode. That it's completely different, given this is... He's invoking more of like a scene in this, I think. More of like, I think there's more of a direct vision as to what this song is about, where I don't think there is with the City. But we said that then, like, and those lyrics are great, but the, like you said, plucked, he's like putting these lyrics because they sound good together. And I know what you mean with this, because it doesn't flow perfectly. Like, what I mean, the narrative of it isn't completely cohesive. In that maybe the two lines work together, but maybe the lines in the verse, all four lines in the verse don't relate to each other as such. But that doesn't detract from how good the song is and how good the lyrics are, because there's a weird, I think there's a feel to this song which isn't phenomenal analysis, because it's really hard to explain what I mean, but it's a simple song and the lyrics aren't, you know, they're not saying anything amazing, but just all together there's something about it which is just so, it just evokes such a feeling from you. I think it's sort of kind of coming to what we said at the start. I think it's when it builds up to that ending and that outro.
Yeah, because even like he switches register, and I think that hits
you.
Yeah. You know, it starts off quite soft and then builds it up a notch into a higher register, and then you it's like you're strapped in then. It's strapped in. That's what I'm going with. Yeah, like, oh, fucking hell, this is good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Who's driving their car with the song on and not going, yeah?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like, brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who's not having a sick time, please?
Yeah, exactly. It makes me, even in my 1.4 Golf, it makes me feel like I'm in a 4-litre Cadillac.
Hey, bro, your Golf is petrol, though.
In Nevada. Yeah, it is petrol, yeah, which, you know, makes me considerably cooler than anyone with a diesel.
I'll get my car.
don't know what you're on about, lads. My car's got a turbo.
Has it got a dump valve?
I don't even know what that is. I only know it's got a turbo because it broke down once, and the bouncer at work was like, oh, that's a turbo.
Okay, so as a more general comment on his lyrical style, this snippet thing he does, where it's just little snapshots of a situation in the case of Robbers, a film, but in the like Chocolate, a song about weed, just plucking things out of a situation and that don't make sense together, but make sense in the context of the song.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just such fantastic artistry.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know how he does it. It's like it's like he's just so in tune with culture and what is culturally relevant about any situation.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have to think, oh God, what would sound cool? It's just what seems most relevant to him happens to be what is cool. That's the gist I always get from it. Like in Chocolate, when he's where you could, oh, ugh, ugh.
Yeah,
that song.
He we've sort of said in the past where he'll take what a lyric like seems so mundane. Not mundane as such, but something that would you just never write a lyric about, that'd be just such a throwaway thing. Like the one that stands out, like in Roadkill, the new song, one of the lines is that George spilled something in his bag. Like, but like, what? You wouldn't think to include that as a lyric, but it perfectly, because that song's all about like, sort of like them being in America, and obviously that sort of like touring life in America. But it's such a specific snapshot of what he's trying to talk about, which
it just helps set the scene, does, I think, and paint the picture.
And he does it so, like, because obviously that's not, he's not the only songwriter doing that, but it's the way that he does stuff which is just so like irrelevant, do you know what I mean?
And like using a name, like you'd think, God, the last thing I want to do when I'm trying to create this otherworldly thing, this music, is put my mate George's name in the song.
Yeah.
It's like that shouldn't work. Like we want to believe that this is written by some superhuman beings, not fucking George, and talking about Sainsbury's.
makes
stuff cool that isn't.
I'm going a bit off subject here, I suppose, but one thing I've noticed in the development of his lyricism is album one and the EPs, it's all quite timeless. There's no references in there which allow you to say that song was written between these two dates, because whereas now you don't care, like referencing I should have said more about the election but I'm a busy guy, you know, when it's during a run-up of an election, doesn't specifically say, you know, the 2019 election. But
like,
you get that.
Kids don't want rifles, they want Supreme. Like, in 10 years' time, people discovering this will be going like, what's Supreme? What the hell?
Yeah. His lyrics, he's now not afraid to date his lyrics.
It's like he's having a conversation with culture through the lyrics at the moment.
Yeah.
And rap, like in a rapper type of way. Like responding to criticism in his songs, it's like super not done in rock, but is in rap, right?
Yeah.
We always say he's super self-referential, so like he'll like get at himself before you can get at him.
Yeah, it's like the whole that music video where they've got all the critics,
sound,
they
don't do anything without. It's all considered, isn't it?
They're not fucking about.
100%.
No. Maybe it's not. Maybe we're giving them too much credit and it's just all coincidental.
Nah, nothing happens by accident in this band. Right, yeah, so final thoughts on Robbers. Manny is the guest. Do you want to kick us off?
One sec. I just wanted to mention one other thing before that. about the lyrical style. Like, I love Bruce Springsteen. Thunder Road, do you know the song Thunder Road?
Mm-hmm. No.
So, screen door slams, Mary's dress sways, like a vision she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Same kind of cinematic brushstroke lyrical style. just building up a scene. I know Healy likes Bruce, and I think there's a lot of that goes into his lyrical style.
Sick, I think. What makes you know that Healy likes Bruce?
I've read it somewhere. I've absorbed it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm not challenging you too hard. I just I don't know, so I was asking.
How could you not like the boss?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I haven't read it somewhere, but I'm just like, yeah, obviously likes Bruce.
maybe your dad told you.
Yeah, I didn't mean it to be like that. I'm just like, holy shit, is that something he said and that you know about? Like, but it, whatever you think, what we believe it is inspired by Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something in my psyche that tells me I've seen it from a semi credible source, but.
I'll take it.
But regardless, it's one of the reasons I fucking love them is
yeah.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me that I love them, given that I love Bruce and I don't know. Just check out Thunder Road and Jungle Land. It's just the same kind of style of just here's a scene. I'm just cherry picking images from an era, and here you go.
I'm not sure I could put it much better, but yeah, the thing, if you add into that the context of it being one of the first songs that they released, and you're hearing it, you'd be like, what the fuck is this? Like, yes! Like, it's a... Imagine us right at the start going, oh, well, that's quite ambitious, to somebody listening to it now thinking completely justified. They're an amazingly huge band. Like, and for us to find common ground with them, like, in the fact that it's a sick tune, you're just like, all right, then. I think that's important, Mom.
I think... It's weird for me because like it never stands out as one of my favorites. It's like, don't worry, I'm gonna get there. But like
bread.
it's just a staple.
It's not like Dairy Milk, like Settle Down is. But I mean, like, when I think of like my favorite songs, obviously like Sex, The Sound, stuff like that, I never quite consider Robbers in it. It's just like Chocolate. Like, I never think of that as one of my favourite ones, but as soon as I hear it, I'm just like, this is just so good. And it's another one of those where it's like, they wrote this so long ago, and it still holds up, it still slaps, and it's still, that live reaction, that says it all, doesn't it? Like, if you write a song when you're 17 years old, that you're playing 15 years later on arena tours, headlining some of the biggest festivals in the world... You're not there by mistake, are you?
Yeah. Talk to me about how my song's shit. Like, do you know what I mean?
I know, and there's like, you know, millions of Spotify streams, you know, thousands of people sort of singing the Now Everybody's Deadline back at you. It says it all. I think it's a simple song, but it's still brilliant. Take us home, Matt.
It is my favourite 975 song.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I could have probably gone on beyond the 4 hours and 14 minutes talking about this. I just love it. It's cinematic. It's heartfelt. You know, it just hits you. I just think it's brilliant. I've described other songs they've produced as pop perfection. This isn't pop perfection. This is bordering on a ballad.
Mm, yeah.
And it's just brilliant.
Right, just one quick thing which we've established now as a running theme for our guests. Manny, what's your favourite chocolate bar?
It was a double decker, but I overate and went off them. I can safely say Picnic.
Oh, that's nice. Out there choice.
The thing is, you can take the guy out of fucking Rochdale.
Although, I probably eat more Milky Ways.
But classic.
I don't, and I would say that is up there with my favourites. But because it costs 15p, or is it 20 now? It can't.
Not anymore, Jesus.
It's like saying your favorite chocolate bar is a fudge or a Taz, you know, or a Freddo. So picnic is my answer.
I don't think we'll get another picnic being chosen. I think that's
I don't either. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, nice. Thanks for listening, everyone. Manny, thanks for coming on, mate. You've been great. You've been really good. Come back on again, definitely.
Oh, man, I've enjoyed it so much. Like I say, there's been so many quizzes throughout this lockdown period.
Yeah, I feel like, what a great time to invite random people on. They're like, oh, well, I've had a great time. It's like, you mean in comparison to the last 1 month, not in comparison to your life.
Hang on. I absolutely want to erase that because it's so disparaging towards all the quality time I spent with people doing quizzes.
If you can
include that, actually.
You know what? I love quizzes, but there's only so many you can take. I think everyone's there now.
I just wanted to purely express that I've enjoyed this.
Thank you very much.
Also, because I don't get to speak in English at length these days, and it's I feel like my verbal capacity is just like diminished. Although that was quite well expressed.
Yeah, well, as he says, verbal capacity diminished.
God, I'm struggling to express this. I've enjoyed the conversation, guys. And,
God, me too.
I think that makes you sound so cool. Oh, I don't get to use my English very much. I'm fluent in Spanish usually, so...
tell me.
You sound cool, bro.
You look so cool.
I feel like, you know what? Cool. We have got some Spanish native listeners. So if you want to drop something in for them, you know, be our guest.
Bienvenidos a Pause It, Play It, el podcast de the 1975.
I tell you what, that's our Spotify ES trailer.
Hey, yes. And Manny makes his own music. You can check him out on Instagram at...
Look, I make a living at the moment of people with bad taste in music by playing... covers on the street.
Jesus, you could just say your social media
at DQ Mank Music.
Amazing. Yeah, let's wrap up the whole thing. So thank you everyone for listening to this episode. Next week we've got Girls. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh William without the vowels. Matt, if you want to explain where
So for both Twitter and Instagram, you can find me at Jew, like a follower of the Jewish religion, knee, like the bend in your leg, or, as in either or, Jew, knee, or...
Junior.
Which is Junior. Or, if you are a member of NATO, it is Juliet, Echo, Whiskey, Kilo, November, Echo... Oscar Romeo.
Thank you, Matthew.
Never gets old for me. I'm not on any social media. Just come here to listen to me chat shit more in the future. Thank you.
Dan's Facebook is dead. So dead.
And I used to chat to Matt Healy on Facebook, but I exploded it. I think for a while, Mark Zuckerberg let people explode them, and it was like, explode.
Yeah, he asked Zuckerberg, and he said, no, Dan, you're not coming back, mate.
Yeah.
So, Matt Healy's told me to not let you.
Yeah.
You've got too much. He knows too much.
Brilliant. Right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. And we will see you next week.
Love you.
Goodbye.